Thank you, Carlos. Good afternoon. And let me also welcome you to this program session where we'll be addressing issues of communications and immigrant populations. We have to go through that. Let's see. What are we going through this afternoon? Well, it's my pleasure to examine with you this afternoon the characteristics and features influencing effective communication with immigrant populations. What I hope to cover in the next few minutes are a brief look at the concepts of immigration and immigrant so that we have a little background on whom we are talking about and under what circumstances we might find them. Next, I will present ideas about frameworks for media communications that are pertinent to social marketing in relation to immigrant populations as well as the immigration system. Following these frameworks, we will focus on features of the immigrant populations that should be considered in operationalizing these frameworks, and finally, some suggested ways to address these features for communicating more effectively with immigrant populations. Since the devastation of 9/11, the United States' potential for opportunities to improve on its various responsibilities has slipped away on a number of public policy issues, not the least of which was to establish a comprehensive, rational, and just immigration system. The results of this neglect has been a growing anti-immigrant sentiment among many of our fellow residents in the country. Myths and misconceptions about immigrants abound, and I believe they do so because there is so little understanding of the immigration system and what is lawful versus unauthorized status of immigrants. Nevertheless, this afternoon, I will not pretend to be able to address all those myths and misconceptions. But in this part of my presentation, I hope to let you get a sense of how immense the administrative job is in dealing with immigration issues, how tremendously complex the job is, and that it affects millions of people who are not criminals nor welfare cheaters, but persons looking for better lives for themselves and their families. Immigration for the United States has developed since the founding of the nation into a more and more complex system. Naturalized citizenship is in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, and the Naturalization Act of 1790 established the rules for it. Since that first public law, there have been more than 30 major laws passed, not counting later amendments or individual personal immigration legislation dealing with special cases and or technical changes to some laws. The point being is that immigration is not as simple as the media and others sometimes make it out to be. Immigrants are people affected and acted on by the immigration system. These persons might be planning to come to the United States, might be just arriving in the United States, might have lived here temporarily to go to school or to work, or might have decided to reside in the United States for a longer period of time and possibly change their citizenship status. Major categories of people in the United States immigration system include, non-immigrant admissions. These include temporary visits for business or pleasure, academic or vocational study, temporary employment, and to act as a representative of a foreign government or international organization. Legal permanent residents are authorized to live, work, and study in the United States permanently. Refugees and asylees are persons who fear or face persecution in their country of nationality, who seek asylum while being in the United States, or seek refugee status while outside the United States. Naturalized citizenship. These are persons going through the process by which U.S. citizenship is conferred upon foreign citizens or nationals after fulfilling requirements set by Congress in the Immigration and Naturalization Act. For non-immigrant admissions, there are short-term and expected long-term residents that, depending on status, will require one of 70 or so different types of visas for admission to the United States. Processing each application can take from 5 months to almost 15 months, depending on where the processing is done. Of the estimated 11.8 million unauthorized immigrants in the United States as of January 2007, about 59% are from Mexico. However, Mexico also has the largest number of non-resident, non-immigrant admissions, the largest number of legal permanent residents, and the largest number of persons who went through naturalization in that year. In 2003, the total foreign-born population was about 33.5 million persons, or 11.7% of the nation's population, with about 40% being naturalized citizens and another 60% non-citizens. Of these, 53.3% were from Latin America, 25% from Asia, and 13.7% from Europe, and with 12% from other countries. In comparison to the native-born U.S. population, this foreign-born population is younger, more are married, almost twice as many married couples have five or more children, lower numbers of high school graduates, and for the Latin American percentage, it is lower at 49%. Well, in terms of high school graduates, while the Asian population, foreign-born, is higher at 80%. And then individual earnings between 20,000 and over 50,000 are lower for foreign-born populations. About 16.6% of the foreign-born are at below the poverty level versus 11.5% of native-born persons. More foreign-born persons, workers, are in the service occupations, the production, transportation, and material moving occupations, and the construction, extraction, and maintenance occupations, while the native-born workers are more into management and professional occupations, as well as sales and office-related workplace occupations. However, for the management and professional occupations, foreign-born Asians have a 47% presence versus native-born with 36.2% and the foreign-born Latino at 12%. After this cursory look at the immigration system, its categories, and the immigrant populations that settle as foreign-born populations in the United States, we will briefly examine the analytic framework that can be used to see how the media relates to immigrant circumstances and expose information inequalities that can reside in how the media relates. Like everyone in the United States, the immigrant is exposed to a myriad of media messages. However, for the immigrant, the messages may be delivered in an unfamiliar context and thus lose some of their meaning. The 2008 National Cancer Institute Monograph Series number 19 on the role of media in promoting and reducing tobacco use provides a well-formed explanation of theoretical underpinnings of media research related to tobacco control and promotion. It provides three broad levels of analysis that I believe can also be pertinent to examine the immigrant circumstances. The three levels of the framework are individual level, which includes various theories for influencing behavioral change; the social network organizational level, which deals with groups of actors and interests with defined and targeted characteristics; and the societal level, in which media is a product of societal forces. The monograph makes the case that mass media is among the most powerful socializing agents of our time, and that it not only is a communication vehicle, but that it sets up an environment of concepts to draw from for public discourse, and as well can limit perspectives for such public discourse. It is an industry owned and or beholden to big companies who deal with it through business practices. However, mass media is also used for a common good through such uses as social marketing, which looks to benefit the target audience and general society. It influences the individual, the social networks and organizations, and society in which it exists. Individuals are a focus of media attention to get them to respond to desired behaviors, while social networks and organizations are areas of influence to achieve such responses. And society is the common ground where the public discourse happens for such individual change to occur. However, it is noted that inequalities in communication can contribute to health disparities as well. Communication inequality is defined as difference among social classes in the generation, manipulation, and distribution of information at the group level, and differences in access and ability to take advantage of information at the individual level. I believe we also need to add the concept that inequality results when one group and or an individual is at a disadvantage from such communication to gain, is at a disadvantage to gain from such communication. For example, not using languages other than English and not being culturally relevant in your communications. Gaining an advantage can be as simple as access to information about what products to avoid because of a recall, or knowing about the weather for the next day to be prepared for it, especially if one needs to work outside. A figure in the monograph used for displaying the institutional conception of media organizations shows it starting with sources of influence which move to media organization for putting out exemplar products and in addressing constituted audiences, who in turn provide a feedback loop to the sources of influence. So this gives an idea of how the media operates. So for me, given this information of the institutional conception of media organizations, and then the need for communication about immigration and for the immigrant, the question becomes, why don't mainstream actors of such a mass media system respond to the needs of immigrants as individuals and immigration as a complex system, deserving of more than just sound bites and stereotyping, so that the societal constituent audience gains an understanding for the immigrant as a real person and immigration as a system with much more complex processes than what we think it entails? I believe such attention can move the societal public discourse toward a more rational and realistic focus for public policy discussion and decision-making. It will also enhance communication with immigrants to come out of their uncertainties, assert their rights, and engage in how best to contribute to the well-being of their respective communities. Although participation of many immigrants in the life of their communities is happening, the quantity and quality of such participation leave much room for improvement in terms of immigrants having access to services and communication outlets. Improvement can be done through effective social marketing techniques and strategies, through social networks and organizations that are trusted, and through community activists that all work towards societal changes needed among local media organizations so that local media organizations can develop norms that pattern a behavior of social justice for dealing with immigrant issues. It is locally where immigrants feel the hurt of societal estrangement. From the demographics of the U.S. foreign-born population noted earlier, we see that various individual level factors such as age, education, marital status, number of young children, and household socioeconomic status are generally quite different than U.S. native-born residents. These differences are usually categorized for our racial and ethnic populations in comparison to the white population as well. However, the immigrant-born, foreign-born populations' experiences can be quite different than are U.S. native-born racial and ethnic populations. Immigrants can be of any color, so their experiences are based not necessarily on color, ethnicity, and the use of languages other than English, in the same way as the native-born person. The immigrant who holds on to his or her nationality, language other than English, and culture experiences these in a much more dominant and pronounced way in his or her life than someone from that same ethnicity who is native-born. The structures of the immigrant social network will be different as well. Especially for recent arrivals, the network size may be smaller, kinship composition will have fewer people, and social interactions do not happen as often for those immigrants who have been here less than 5 years. Community health workers and health promoters, also known as promotoras, use their community connections to access these immigrant social networks. However, along with accessing social networks to communicate with immigrants, facilitating how they find affordable and culturally relevant living arrangements, including co-residencies, is an important area in the early stages of settlement that also helps to relieve their financial stresses. Along with addressing these social network structural issues for immigrants, we must ensure that societal public policies are coherent in dealing with the milieu in which new arrivals will be received by putting in place legal structures and/or stimulating community normative behaviors toward immigrants to affect effective communications and trust. One such area for establishing a welcoming environment is to examine the ratio of rent to wages for immigrants, so that although policies favoring limited English proficiency and culturally competent measures are instituted, the actual income level of the immigrant is a living wage at the basic wage level. In consideration of developing a welcoming environment for newcomers to the United States, efforts should be made to know the strengths being brought to the community by the newly arrived immigrants. Making the decision to self-select and come to a new land with new people and new customs is not only responding to an ambition, but is a test of character and courage. Also, from what little we have seen of the immigration system in my earlier presentation, one can only marvel at the strength of character, resourcefulness, and tenacity of immigrants that navigate the system and are here. Providing an environment that can appreciate these character and skill strengths, processes can be established to use such strengths so they contribute to the community as ongoing benefits, since more immigrants will likely follow. On the other hand, with some communities sending signals that immigrants are not wanted here, or that immigrants are seen as terrorists, or that deportation proceedings are just around the corner, what kind of communication does that convey? It is a shoot myself in the foot mentality that won't feel the pain until the community gets a bad reputation as a place to live and stops growing. In conclusion, well, what does this all have to do with public health? Communication is fundamental to human existence. The features of the immigrant populations noted earlier are key issues to know for effective communication in terms of individual, social network, and societal changes. Accessing these populations with effective communication by using social marketing methods at these three different entry points provides a more comprehensive approach in using the four P's of product, price, place, and promotion in the context of the immigrant's experience. These can be short-term efforts that have long-term effects. The recent report of the World Health Organization's Commission on the Social Determinants of Health recognizes that health operates in a larger context and that a healthy community deals with the social determinants. Being in a community that is welcoming of newcomers, one that cares enough to speak their language and honors or at least recognizes their cultural mores and says public services are there for you, cannot but help establish a healthy environment for itself and all those living and contributing to its resource growth. It is the public health professionals that know how to deal with diverse populations by serving their unique needs in culturally competent and linguistically appropriate ways. We are agents for change for the U.S. immigrant population because we know how to address the community environment and the social determinants, as well as knowing how to use communications and the media for the good of the community. This is the challenge that continues to be before us and will be a significant part of our future. Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. And we will have more than 20 minutes at the end of the presentations to handle all the questions, so we will leave the questions for the end of the presentations. Our next presenter is Dr. Holly Jacobson. Dr. Jacobson is a specialist in applied linguistics with a focus on spoken and written discourse in healthcare settings. She is assistant professor of languages and linguistics at the University of Texas, El Paso. She has conducted research in health disparities at the University of Arizona and the University of Northern Texas. Her research is unique in the focus of the interaction between language and health. Dr. Jacobson's area of interest include intercultural communication, interactional social linguistics, multiliteracies, translation and interpreting studies on corpus and corpus linguistics. She is with us during this afternoon with a presentation entitled Language Needs of Immigrants, Developing Sensible Health Communication Strategies. Dr. Holly Jacobson.